In 732, a Muslim army from Iberia, under the command of Abdurrahman al-Ghafiqi, invaded France. It was not very much out of the usual. Iberian Muslims occasionally raided France since having conquered Spain in 711. However, this time was different in that the Muslims were stopped at the Battle of Tours by Charles Martel, Charlemagne's grandfather. Whatever temporary gains the Muslims had achieved in France were slowly pushed back by the Franks. The last Muslim stronghold, Narbonne, finally fell in 759 and the Muslims were completely pushed over the Pyrenees. That's it for Muslim political existence in France, right? This video is sponsored by Magellan TV. Magellan TV is a streaming service that hosts over 3,000 documentaries and shows in various genres, from history to science as well as travel and art. They're adding new shows all the time, which you can enjoy on all sorts of devices. Also, best of all, there are no ads and an increasing percentage of shows is now available in 4K with no additional cost. They were kind enough to offer Al Muqaddimah viewers an extended free month-long trial. You can go to try.magellantv.com/Al Muqaddimah to take advantage of that. I'm excited to announce that Magellan TV is now offering a buy one, get one free gift card on its yearly subscription for the people in your life you might want to give the gift of knowledge. The link is also in the description. I would strongly recommend War and Wisdom, which brings forth an interesting comparison of Islam's Golden Age and the Crusades. It's a bit of a traditional narrative, but it's very informing nonetheless. Also, it starts with the flight of Ibn Firnas, the first documented attempt at human flight, so it's definitely worth checking out. Secondly, you should check out Idea Wars, the birth of printing, which tells the tale of Gutenberg and his printing press, which changed the world forever. Again, you can take advantage of a month-long free trial by clicking the link in the description. It would also help the channel. Back to the video. In 887, a small ship carrying around 20 Andalusian sailors landed near the modern town of Saint-Tropez. They took over a settlement called Freinet and established themselves in the fort overlooking the town. The fort was called Fraxinetum, which is usually the name used for almost all subsequent fortresses that the Muslims would come to take over. These days, the mountain is known as Massif des Maux, or the Mountain of the Moors. Now, we're not really clear on who these men were, and how only 20 of them were able to accomplish this. Most of the sources on the story I'm about to tell you are Christian. We hardly have any Arab sources that even mention the region. As Christians were the targets of their raid, you can imagine why the authors of our sources were salty. As a result, it's difficult to draw a complete and unbiased picture of what happened. So, even though modern scholars have used these sources and the historical method very diligently, almost everything in this video is probably slightly incorrect. For example, the 20 Andalusian sailors who conquered Fraxinetum might have been a bit more than 20 and might not have been Andalusians, but they did conquer Fraxinetum, so it's an interesting story despite the problems with the sources. After conquering this impenetrable fortress, the Andalusians called on their Muslim brethren. They got help from the Iberian coast, North Africa, and Sicily, all of which were obviously under Muslim control. By 906, they controlled and raided almost all of modern-day Provence. We know that they even occupied the town of Aqui near Genoa in Italy. By 939, the Andalusians crossed the Alps and raided northern Italy as well as southern Switzerland. They attacked the monastery of St. Gall and destroyed the abbey of Agouan in Valais. Around the same time, in 939, Genoa was sacked by North African and Sicilian Muslims who raided from the south. Although it's not difficult to imagine that the Muslims of Fraxinetum also joined them. The reason that they were able to do all this is because Western Europe was going through serious problems at the time. The Carolingian Empire had just fallen and everybody was trying to accumulate as much power as they could. Although even then, the Muslims became too much of a hassle to tolerate, so naturally, local authority was inspired to do something about the problem. In 941, the King of Italy, Hugo of Arles, assembled an army to attack Fraxinetum and put an end to it. He even got help from the Byzantine Emperor, Romanus Lecapenus, who sent a fleet which was to help from the sea in case of any reinforcements. This is where it gets interesting. Apparently, just when he was about to destroy the Muslims, he did what's called a pro-gamer move and allied with them instead. There were multiple reasons for this. The crown of Italy was being challenged, and he didn't want his rivals invading with an army from the north. In addition to that, the King of East Francia, modern-day Germany, and the future Holy Roman Emperor, Otto the Great, was accumulating power in the north. King Hugo just wanted a buffer between him and the threats to the north. The final reason is that the Muslims of Fraxinetum were being sheltered by none other than Caliph Abdurrahman III of Cordoba. Again, sources are kind of fuzzy, but we know that both Otto and Hugo reached out to Abdurrahman III regarding the Muslim raiders. So even if he wasn't their patron, and that's a big if, some people at the time might have thought that he was. Although frankly, it sounds exactly like something Abdurrahman would do. Hugo of Arles seems to have been active in trading with Abdurrahman and didn't want to disrupt the relations. In fact, an interesting story goes that when Abdurrahman III made peace with the Muslim ruler of Barcelona, the peace negotiations were attended by some Franks and Italians. According to some sources, Hugo was actually one of the people involved. Because of his alliance with the less than desirable allies in order to protect his own interests, Hugo is obviously really criticized in Christian sources, who would have compared him with the CIA during the Cold War if they didn't live before the CIA and the Cold War. Now, what did the alliance result in? The Muslims had entrenched themselves in the Alpine passes, where they harassed and robbed pilgrims going between France and Italy. Hugo allowed them to remain there and actually encouraged them to raid neighboring regions to weaken them so an invading army wouldn't be able to replenish its supplies there. Although they were less like highway bandits robbing the Alpine passages and more like toll collectors. They collected toll on different kinds of items, in other words, extortion. This resulted in the Muslims becoming crazy wealthy, and they started acting like a real kingdom by propping up a string of fortresses and taxing the area they controlled. They didn't intervene in the religion of the people who were now technically their subjects. Obviously, they did raid and destroy monasteries. They also tried to play a part in local politics, for example, by sheltering rebels and renegades. There's even a traveler's account where it's mentioned that the Saracens and locals were living together peacefully in the Italian hill town of Vercelli. One weird thing about Fraxinetum, however, is that despite dealing with Christians, there never seems to have been a leader or commander that was mentioned anywhere. There is one in the Islamic sources, Nasr ibn Ahmad, who is mentioned as the governor of the Balearic Islands who commanded Fraxinetum. But the problem with that is obvious. Fraxinetum was never under the control of the Balearic Islands, and those islands in turn were under the control of Abdurrahman III. The alliance with Hugo and the era afterwards resulted in the peak of the power of Fraxinetum. Although the confidence they gained from so successfully and frankly easily conquering so much area was going to become their doom. They raided the Upper Rhine Valley, which was under the control of Otto the Great. Otto had good relations with Abdurrahman III, and he called on him to put a check on Fraxinetum. Obviously, Otto was only going to resort to diplomacy for so long before he took action, and so Fraxinetum was now involved in upsetting the balance of power in Western Europe. While we're not sure if Abdurrahman III did something about this, Otto began supporting local resistance against Fraxinetum. At the same time, their raids brought them face to face with the Hungarian Magyars, who were also raiding the same territory. From what I can tell, apparently the survivors of that battle were subsequently picked off and slaughtered by Conrad of Burgundy. In 972, the Muslims captured a man named Maillus, who was crossing the Alps. He was the abbot of Cluny, and he was considered a living saint by many Christians. He was ransomed for 1,000 pounds of gold and released, but his capture united the Christians into forming something of a crusade. The expedition was led by one Guillaume I of Provence. In the summer of 972, they attacked the Muslims near Tuatua in Upper Provence. In the same year, they moved on the main base at Fraxinetum and captured it. Muslim inhabitants of Provence were executed, enslaved, and exiled. Although Fraxinetum wasn't the only place where the Muslims were living. As mentioned before, they were present in northern Italy as well as parts of Switzerland. The Sass Valley in eastern Switzerland was famously under Muslim occupation as well. Now, what exactly was the nature of Fraxinetum, and what was its place in the wider world around it? Usually, the raiders of Fraxinetum are called pirates, and I have done so in the past as well. Because of this term, I looked into the wider world of the Mediterranean. It seems that there was a Viking-level network of raiders and mercenaries in the Mediterranean at the time. In fact, during the so-called Viking Age, Europe was being ravaged by three types of raiders: the Vikings, the Magyars, and the Muslims. All of them were seen as godless barbarians by the Christians for understandable reasons. This is kind of a long story that I will explain further in another video, but here's what happened. During the reign of Al-Hakam, the third emir of Cordoba, there was a rebellion in the outskirts of Cordoba in or around 818. It was mainly composed of Muwallads, Muslims of native Iberian descent. After Al-Hakam destroyed the rebellion, he killed the senior leaders and exiled everyone else in the thousands. These men went to Idrisid Morocco and Abbasid Egypt. Here, they eventually came into conflict with the locals and were driven out. They went to the island of Crete. There, they founded what's usually called the Emirate of Crete. From here, they began harassing everyone. The Aegean Sea became their base of operation. Apparently, the trade between Syria and Muslim Spain was disrupted by them, and so Byzantine Emperor Theophilos asked Emir Abdurrahman II of Cordoba to join him in attacking Crete, although Abdurrahman II refused. The Emirate of Crete became very successful, and it became a hub for exiled and out-of-work soldiers. As with every successful enterprise, other similar bases started appearing throughout the Mediterranean. There were various in Italy, North Africa, Iberia, and as mentioned before, Crete. During the civil wars that shook the Italian peninsula during the mid-9th century, various sides hired Muslim mercenaries. These mercenaries, when out of work, would then raid the very same Italian cities, including Rome, which they raided thrice in the mid-9th century. This is exactly what led to Fraxinetum being a similar raiding hub for the Muslims. Although that's not exactly all it was. The Muslim sources that do mention Fraxinetum seem to be more sympathetic to it than other similar raiding hubs. They mention it as more than just that. They mention it as something of an agricultural and industrial region as well. Apparently wood was being cut and shipped by the Muslims and sent to Al-Andalus. This might have been the reason that Abdurrahman III supported them, if he did at all. In addition to that, buckwheat was imported and cultivated by the Muslims there as well. This is still evident by the fact that it's called Saracen wheat in Provence. Also, according to some scholars, there are certain species of goat native to North Africa that can still be found in Provence. And also, apparently raising of pigs is rare in some areas. These are all clear signs that Fraxinetum was more than just a raiding hub. There is even archaeological evidence to support a mining operation in the area. Also, the way that Muslims were living with local population in some areas is pretty peculiar if Fraxinetum was just a raiding hub. Now, for almost 100 years, there was significant Muslim presence in southern France, parts of Italy, and Switzerland. Obviously, there is a lot of its legacy still around, although the question of how much is difficult to answer. There are many place names that sound like obvious deformations of Arabic words. Some traditional and local cultural things can be interpreted as foreign as well. But all of it is speculative. Nothing is concrete. Not to mention the locals don't like being told that they might have Arab ancestry. Perhaps the biggest piece of Fraxinetum's legacy are the Crusades. When Pope Urban II declared a crusade to capture Jerusalem in 1095, the memory of those barbarian Muslim raiders was still somewhat fresh. Muslims and other raiders have been explained by the contemporaries as God's punishment for the sins of the Frankish Empire. One can imagine that when Fraxinetum fell, it was seen as a ray of hope of return of God's favor. Now, you might be tempted to comment on how this was a great victory by Christendom against the heathens and whatever and blah blah blah. I've heard it all before. This story is actually a very interesting story because it shows how self-interests and economics are always more important than religious values. We see a Christian king allying with Muslim raiders to protect himself against other Christians. We see a Christian emperor calling on a Muslim ruler against Muslim raiders. We see Christians hiring Muslim mercenaries against fellow Christians. These raiders and mercenaries might have used the concept of holy war to justify their raids, but these were men who were just looking to make a quick buck in addition to a genuine search for a place to live. None of this is untypical for its era. History is always more complicated than us, the good guys, versus them, the bad guys. Except in the stories involving Tamerlane. That guy is always the worst. Vikings did largely the same thing as the Muslim raiders, and they're idolized these days in movies and games and TV shows. Fraxinetum, at least, can be judged by the same standards as the Vikings without trying to paint Islam and all Muslims as bloodthirsty. I'll see you next time.